This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Well, Baker Mayfield is a step down, but I got to tell you, he burned the Eagles last year pretty bad. I mean, he torched the Eagles in a playoff game. That was a joke. Jetta Cameron, John Ritchie, 94 WIP. Great to be with you on this Monday morning. By the way, Jason Kelce joins us today, coming up at 7:30. Jason will be in studio with us, fielding your phone calls for an entire hour from 7:30 to 8:30, as he is every Thursday with us on the program. All right, a lot today on Jalen Hurts, obviously kind of trying to assess three games into his fifth season, what Jalen Hurts is as the starting quarterback of the Eagles, meaning, you know, level of play. Obviously, the town is teetering more, I would say, on Jalen right now than ever. Meaning, I would say that the town is, I think it's pretty clear the town is teetering more now after the first three games than after the end of last year. Because while the end
of
last
year, I feel like he's being unfairly assessed.
Because he got Kellen Moore and it's supposed to be cleaned up, and he's leading the league in turnovers again.
Worse, people think worse of him now than they did at the end of last season.
Oh, for sure. You don't?
Oh, God,
I think
no.
So, too. I think people think worse. I think people are jumping on this he's a turnover guy thing.
Yeah, I think it's
way
a big
too hard.
Well, Ray, we'll see where the poll goes accurate. By the end of the show. Yeah. You know, the top 10 poll will assess how people felt off season versus today. We'll get to that as we move through the show, but we'll see.
I think people are jumping way too hard on this whatever bandwagon. Jalen is a turnover machine.
Well, he's got to be a better decision maker. There's no question.
He does.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that, do you understand that we're talking about having two hands on the ball instead of one? And it was a split second moment.
That's the job.
Yes. And he's been really good with that. I expect him good with
he
that.
Had.
John,
he hasn't.
He had been really
he
good.
Had been.
He had
yes.
been. Yes.
He had been.
Yeah.
And I've seen him been.
Yeah.
And I know that that's something that they work on every single day ad nauseum, where everyone else is sick of hearing
Give me the week if it continues. You're like, all right, now there's a problem. Is it week six?
What, when, if there's turnover?
If he just keeps turning
frequency?
It over. Yeah, when do you say, okay, now my antenna's further up?
I guess if I look around the league and I see that that Patrick Mahomes is settling in and actually playing elite football.
Mahomes
if
is 3-0.
If I see that, but have you watched the Chiefs
They could
play?
Have lost
he has
all
not
three.
Been elite.
Yeah,
my God,
I'm
aware. As far from elite as he's ever been.
But he's
you
the best.
You look at his numbers. No, he hasn't been. His numbers show he's been way down the
but
list.
But he is
he's
the
been
best.
Middle
but he's
of the
best.
Past.
But he's the best.
He's
the best.
He's the best.
But you understand his numbers and the way that he's played.
It's been a strange
has
year.
Has not been the best.
I do. All right,
and so here we are judging our quarterback and saying this is a finality. Oh, no. He is what he is. Patrick Mahomes is playing below his standard.
No, that's
right
true.
Now.
That's accurate. All right, let's welcome in as he joins us so frequently on the show, and it's exciting when the Phillies basically won a playoff round last night. Mr. Ruben Amar, good morning, Ruben.
Good morning, guys. What's happening,
Ruben? It's like they won a series last night.
Yeah, it's big,
right?
Yeah, it's big. It's one of the they had set goals, and that's one of them.
So let's get right to it, Ruben. Address the I'm excited they won a round last night. By not having to play the round next week versus the, yeah, but I am concerned because history shows over the last 2 years, teams that shut it down for a week struggle.
Also, why doesn't it seem as important to actually go in and get the one seed? Like, why did it seem like they were cool with just having a bye? And
well, I don't know that that's accurate.
I think they're still working on the one seed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's still important to them, too, as well. But not as important as getting that bye because I think – you know, for this team, when you have veterans like this and you have guys that are sort of banged up a little bit, and as you've seen, you know, it's a little different than it used to be. Guys aren't going out on rehab assignments. Guys aren't. So there are ways for them to stay sharp that are way different than it once was. And I, You know, I look at guys like Trey Turner, who was out for, what, a month, over a month, almost 6 weeks? And he ended up coming back, bouncing back, and actually playing pretty well. Not at the same level he was when he got hurt. But, you know, you think about all the guys that had have had injuries and the fact that they didn't go out on rehab assignments. I mean, it's different the way they get themselves prepared, and it's they're better at it. I mean, they can sort of simulate things a little bit better.
So that's a really interesting point. Like the Trey Turner thing. Like what Trey Turner's experience this year, it did seem just very fruitful. You know, like his return to play, it didn't seem like he skipped a beat.
Well, he wasn't running as hard.
That's very true,
He was picking his spots.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
He wasn't the same player, but as far as timing and seeing the ball, making contact and that sort of thing, he wasn't bad. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't like that he was lost.
So is it possible, Ruben, that the team can adjust to this layoff concept?
I think that's a little overblown. I think there's something to it, but I also think that there's ways to create simulated games. There's ways to, I mean, it all kind of depends on your mindset, and it also depends on, you know, how you prepare. And I think these guys prepare so well. They're so in tune with, you know, being ready to play a baseball game that I think that they sort of understand what it takes. Now, obviously, competition, you cannot replace it. And so the intensity of the competition is one thing, but these guys have been through it last two or three years.
Yeah, but not a week off.
They haven't, but they haven't done that. But they've also been through the playoffs. They know the intensity level. They understand what it is.
But Ruben, here's what I'll say about the simulated games. It's getting a lot of talk now. You know, do it or not. Is it one game? Is it two games? Is it three games? Like, if I'm Rob Thompson, I'm rolling the ball out, and I'm saying, guys, here's the deal. We're playing a simulated game, and we're playing it for real. Pitch clock. 9 innings, you're hustling your hardest, like, for real. Because, you know, my thought is, like, James, you and I have done radio for close to 15, 20 years now, okay? And we know what it's like to, and Rhea, I'm sure you've done this, to tape an interview that is before it airs, okay? Like, you know, sometimes a notable guest will say, I can only do Tuesday at 3:30, and, like, fine, we'll tape you in a studio Tuesday at 3:30. I know it never feels the same when it's not live.
There's no energy.
The energy is lower. Yeah. You know, like, if you mess up, you can, like, hold on, cut. We'll cut that out. Let me restate the question. Like, it's weird. My point, Ruben, is if I'm Rob Thompson, I'm saying to the guys, we're playing a real game. I'm not going to say cut at any point. Like, we're playing a baseball game.
Somebody gets injured.
I take that chance. That chance than have them
Dealing with adult men.
That's why you're not
a
manager.
Who do you think you are, man? Yeah, they're going to be mad at you for thinking this is your plan.
But Ruben, I mean, we've seen teams really. By the way, like, a lot of these teams don't even lose in five. Like, there's teams that have, like, lost in three straight games with a week layoff. I mean, the Dodgers and the Yankees have done nothing in the playoffs.
They're also not handing the ball to Zach Wheeler in the game one.
Maybe
you know, one of the great postseason pitchers for 2 years we've seen.
Maybe
they just weren't good.
And also, the Phillies didn't win without the bye. So,
Ruben, would you play a simulated game?
I would play a
couple innings.
I would play pieces of a simulated game because I like to see you guys have live at bats. But that said, again, this is one of those teams they're a veteran team. They understand what it takes to get together, to get ready. And you cannot duplicate the intensity of the playoffs, regardless of how many simulated games.
I agree
with
that.
It's not even close.
That's for sure. All right. It's a fascinating conversation, what the Phillies should do, what, you know, essentially Rob Thompson should do. All right, great to be with you on this Thursday morning. Hello. Do you remember, Ruben?
Oh, I remember. There
you go.
Of course I do.
There you go. All right, so Jason Kelce with us coming up in about 15 minutes. Phone calls through the show. Phils with Dubai and Eagles, an assessment today of Jalen Hurts. What is he? You finished the sentence. Jalen Hurts is what, Ruben? Where do you stand?
Growing. He's growing. He's still growing. I think he's going to be a really good quarterback. Is he going to be elite? I do not know.
Ruben, which is he more? Evolving or devolving?
Evolving.
You feel confident in that?
E.
Okay.
Not a D.
James, do you feel confident it's evolving, not devolving?
So, yes. If you had asked me at the end of last season, I would have said devolving.
Yeah.
But I've been encouraged by what I've seen from Jalen.
Wow, I'm surprised.
This I mean, look, we went this whole offseason with the number one thing we talked about, nonstop, the blitz.
Bad.
He's done a really good job so far in charge of that. And look, the turnovers have gotten, I know he's had a couple bad ones, but it has gotten better. I mean, game one was a disaster from that perspective, and he's done a better job the last two games, so to speak. There's still a problem. The turnovers are my biggest issue, but I do think he's headed in the right direction.
Think about I think about what John says about the coordinators, the number of coordinators he's had over his career. I mean, the learning experience. I mean, this isn't a guy that does things naturally, unfortunately, because he's so naturally gifted talent-wise.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to develop this other parts of his game, decision-making, vision, those kind of things have to develop. And he hasn't really had any support, I don't think, or enough consistent support in the right way so that he can say, okay, this is what I got to do. These are the matchups, et cetera, et cetera.
I really think
the fact that he has not had hasn't had any consistency in that level.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact that the consistency he can lean into this year is this run game is going to be powerful. It actually is a power run game. That's something that we haven't even talked about.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, I think Miles Sanders here in Philly, we were zone run attack, you know, like inside zone right, inside zone left, everything based off the ride and decide. It was inside zone. Man, things have really opened up for us with the way things are blocked up front with all these offensive linemen. We're no longer doing the zone blocking where everyone's stepping in concert with one another. We're now pulling the guard. We're pulling the tackle. This is power. The way that they refer to these schemes, load schemes, power schemes, man schemes. Like, you crush people. Like, this is where you're pulling a 350-pound Landon Dickerson
right.
and destroying whoever's waiting on the end of the line of scrimmage. And, oh, by the way, you're going to be pulling the tackle up inside of Landon's kickout. How awesome is that going to be? Because our tackle weighs 380 pounds.
Yeah.
And he's also as athletic as all get out because he ran with the rugby ball.
So John, that's all on point and accurate and fascinating. There's another thing going on in pro football this year we haven't discussed much, but it's going to be a bigger thing as the year goes on. Rushing yards up, passing yards down. And this is something John, you know, said probably 5 to 7 years ago, early years of our show in the middays, that this was going to happen as defenses got smaller. As defenses got smaller, that teams would start running more. So it's been an interesting phenomenon. All right, let's get a lot of calls in here. Jason Kelce in about 10 minutes. Mike right now. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, gang.
What's up, Mike?
All right, so Jalen is a very, very good quarterback, and I think Rube hit the perfect word. He's still evolving. I mean, he's still young.
Totally.
Yeah. You know,
very
John,
young.
John, you laid it out brilliantly earlier. Like, he's still got so much more growth to go. And you know what? Again, it's so easy to look at the turnovers, and I get it. We all agree they got to get cleaned up, but I do see progress out of this kid.
There has been progress. I'd say there's been both progress and regression, which is what is a weird dynamic. It's like, I think he's headed backwards, but he's improved a lot in certain areas.
But it's understandable that that would happen in a new offense that he told us was 95% new
terminology.
Vernacular.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
But again, Mike, my thing is, man, just like step up, don't step out, don't always run to your right, protect the football.
And that is getting better. That is improving. Some of those glaring, repetitive mistakes are lessened. They're not gone. I mean, he hasn't completely fixed all this stuff.
Look, he played a better second half.
His coaches haven't completely fixed all this stuff.
I'm not ready to say
that
out of the woods.
He is a work in progress. These coaches need to continue to really rail on Jalen. Remember the good cop, bad cop thing that we talked with DeFilippo about.
Yep.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but they need to figure out a way to bring the discipline to this is difficult. Bring discipline to a guy who's getting paid more than any coach, getting paid more than anyone else in the building. That's the tricky part.
Yeah, that is tricky. Mike, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, I definitely fall short of calling him elite. I think he's going to be on the back half of the top 10. Elite is a word we throw around a little too freely these days. You know, like Jalen, He throws a good deep ball, but he's not that accurate on a deep ball. Like, how many times have you ever seen him really lead a deep ball where, you know, where a receiver doesn't break stride? Elite quarterbacks do that. Jalen can't do that.
I think he can do that. I think Jalen can make the throws, but he's not going to wow you like Josh Allen does.
No, well, you don't have
the
that.
Throws.
Hey, Mike, give me a big-time answer, man. What's only happened one time, non-sports related?
Okay, so as of right now, there's only been one time that we've eradicated a disease from humans, and that's smallpox.
Ooh. Is that accurate?
I don't know. I believe so. I mean, polio, did we? I think polio's still around, though, right? So
still around, but there's a vaccine. So the theory is that smallpox, nobody gets it.
Yeah, smallpox is eradicated.
If that's accurate.
That's a big answer.
That would be a very big answer.
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Well, we'll look it up.
We need confirmation.
We'll look it up, but that's fascinating. All right, James, hold off on that for a second, because I need you here to play some audio. Let's get to the Brandon Marsh night. There was a couple different things going on with Brandon Marsh last night, pregame, in-game, post-game. Let's start before the game when Brandon Marsh addressed the crowd before the game.
We accomplished a big goal, taking over the East this year. It's been a long, very, very fun season for us. And again, thank you guys for that. We know we got some more work to do, though. It's just the first step of our goal. And we can't do it without you guys. We're looking forward to a lot of home games here this October.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life. But that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
And we're going to need you guys to bring it. We're going to need you guys to be rowdy, bring the thunder. And we're going to have to let the dogs eat.
I don't know about all that. But
why did he get picked to be the speaker for the team? The
representative for the team. They have a different person, I think, every year.
Yeah, that's all right.
I think it's super cool.
It's good.
By the way, he's a young guy. They didn't completely rely upon him at times to hit the left-handed pitching.
He's an energy guy. You know,
it feels like he's a leader without being an actual baseball performance leader.
Well, he's one of their worst everyday players, but he's a fan favorite.
And every player loves him. Same with Stubbsy.
Yeah, everyone loves him. All right, so that's Marsh pregame. Let's go to Marsh. You know, he had a big hit. Phil's obviously with the victory last night. Marsh had a big hit to help the cause.
Swung on, hit at the alley, right center field. That one's going to fall for a hit and go to the wall. One run will score. Stott is coming home. JT coming around third. He'll score without a throw. As Brandon Marsh cleans him off, it's a three-run double, and the Phillies break open an 8-4 lead.
You know, that was one of those games last night. It felt like a lot of the guys had big moments. I mean, Trey obviously with a homer early. You know, Stott had an extra base hit, scoring two. Castellanos a homer. Cody Clemens went deep. Marsh again, that big hit. JT later in the game had an RBI hit. So it was one of those things a lot of people were eating, as they say. Let's go post-game now. Brandon Marsh, this was a funny exchange. He's on with Tom McCarthy and Krucker on TV on NBC Sports Philadelphia talking about his bases clearing triple.
JT kept his composure up there and didn't chase with men on and score in position. And he just passed the baton to me. And, you know, I feel like that's just who we are.
Is that your nonverbal way of letting the big dog eat?
You like that one?
Good stuff there by the crew. All right, let's go to the phones.
Real quick, smallpox is the only disease to be eradicated.
That could be a winning answer. Wow. That's a big one.
Which is funny because Mike was the caller who originally had Rhea's summary answer.
Oh,
so good,
so
pivot
happy.
From Mike.
That
big
was
answer.
Pretty good.
We've got some questions for Ruben related to the postseason we'll get to while he's in here today. Jason Kelce will join us shortly. Keith in Northeast Philadelphia right now. Hi, Keith.
Yo, morning, guys.
What's up, Keith?
What's going on? Yeah, John, I agree with you more. I would say Hurts is in the 7-10 range. And Joe, what NFC quarterback? I'll say Brock Purdy's better than Hurts, but what other NFC quarterback's better than Hurts?
Well, there's not many because there's not many good ones. So, I mean, listen, Dak and Hurts is close. I would lean Dak. Yeah. Purdy, I would say. You know, I haven't seen him much this year, but Purdy, yeah. I think, is a little better. But it's a weak crop of NFC quarterbacks. I mean,
yeah,
I got to see the Washington guy more. I got to see him more. I got to see Jordan Love more. You consider him, but he got hurt right away.
Jaden Daniels is.
Yeah, I mentioned him. You know,
he's really going to be legit, but he's so young. He'll make tons of mistakes along the way. Yeah. Kyler
Stafford's
Murray has
older.
Been really good this season thus far.
But Keith, here's the thing I'll say: like being better than Baker Mayfield. Isn't the standard. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I agree. Quarterback play in general is really down. Like, Trevor Lawrence is horrible. Everyone thought he was like this phenom.
He's just not.
Points are down, too. You talked about the running thing. Points are down pretty substantially, too.
Yep.
Yeah. And real quick on the Phillies, like, I don't know how much I trust the Stevens as the closer. I would almost go Kirkring, Strom, and then I would have Hoffman close. Just curious what you guys think about that.
Yeah, well, it's here's the thing I'll say, Keith. It's an interesting – and, Keith, give me a great answer. We'll address that in a moment. What's only happened one time, Keith?
Yeah, I'm going to say only one president served four terms, FDR.
Yeah, that's true. Not four complete ones, but he got to four terms. He won four elections. That's right.
Is this Stevens?
We could have said three, too.
Say it again, James.
Only president served three.
He is also the only president to serve three. That's right.
Estevez doesn't feel like he's the guy that I trust the most, but he's the guy who feels most comfortable maybe in that role.
Well, see, this is one of those things. They didn't develop Estevez as a seventh or eighth inning guy, so if you flip them in the postseason and say we're going with Hoffman, then is Estevez less effective in the seventh or eighth? I mean, you know.
It feels like this is kind of the bed that
they tricky
made.
Spot. Tricky spot.
But I don't know that you can't back out.
I know. At this point, it's a little late. All right, Jason Kelce in studio with us in 1 minute. 1 minute from now, Kelce on all sorts of stuff, primarily the Eagles.
Hey, Philly, if it's been a minute since you've considered a Nissan, now's the time to check out my friends at the Busch Auto Group. With six new Nissan models under $30,000 and two locations in Limerick and Exton, quality and affordability are right around the corner. This month, save up to $10,000 on select Nissan models. Visit them in-store at Exton Nissan and Nissan 422 of Limerick or online at BushAutoGroup.com. That's B-U-S-H, AutoGroup.com. Philly rides with us.
Philly also rides with Jason Kelce, who's with us in studio, as he will be every single Thursday at this time. Philly's been riding with Kelce for about a year and a half. By the way, we're riding with Garage Beer. Because, you know, the garage is always open, Jason Kelce. How are you, buddy?
That it is.
So congrats on your garage beer business. And
cool shirt.
Thank you.
It's a great. You got the shirt on, and we got a 2-on-1 football team. So garage beer, man, we are happy at WIP now to be partnering with them, which is like the same thing as being partnered with you.
That's right. We're honored. It's
Well, are you with us? I mean, is it really an honor?
Are you kidding me? Very much so.
You got low standards.
I am a very new to the prospect of business ownership. So this is actually awesome.
Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I'm not like, you know, I'm not the CEO, but it's fun to be involved in like the marketing campaign and to actually be involved in like the strategy of the business and how it, I don't know, it's a new world and it's fun.
Well, item is a fun item that helps.
That helps for sure.
So Jason, I'm going to read something, but then I'm going to ask you to translate and tell us what it all really means. So I'm going to read Garage Beer. Hey, the garage is always open. See, I got this on a piece of paper. I'm gonna nail the read here, as they call it.
I think you said that when you said I'm going to read it.
Yeah, but here we go. Light beer like it used to be. Find Garage Beer at your local retailer or online at garagebeer.com. Official beer of the Kelce brothers and dads everywhere. All right, Jason, translate that for us. Garage Beer, for everyone listening, tell us what it's all about.
It's beer-flavored beer. It's not like, you know, anything that's trying to be something that it's not. It's not trying to be advertised like it's some, like, you know, something to be hailed. It's a beer to drink while you have time to drink beer, when you get a free moment. And everybody's got busy schedules with kids and running around. And, you know, I think it's something to be enjoyed when you get a, spare moment or when the opportunity arises.
Good man.
I like it. I said, Jason, that's what garage beer is. What are the 2024 Philadelphia Eagles? We've seen three games. How does it net out for you? We've been discussing, John, we've been discussing it all week. There's some confusion, I'd say, in the market with people trying to figure out what this team is. Clearly, yeah, they could have lost all three. They could have won all three. It nets out record-wise to 2-1. Quality of team-wise, what do you say?
Well, they've played some pretty good teams. They've, I think that they have, I mean, we're still figuring it out. It's only three games in. Yep. They've been really, really good on offense. Pretty much all the games outside of the turnovers, right? Outside of mistakes and sloppiness, they have really good pieces, and Kellen has shown he's added his system to it, and it feels like things are really operating well right now. Defensively, obviously poor performance against Atlanta, and kind of spotty, I would say, against Green Bay, which field conditions and all that. But last week, I mean, just completely dominant. I think that both O-lines and D-lines have a lot of talent. I think that if they stay healthy, they are among the best teams in the NFC at this point. And we'll see how they continue to evolve as the season goes.
How well has Jalen performed?
I think Jalen's performed really well. I think week one, I think obviously there were some careless throws potentially made, right? I think there are some key turnovers that really caused that game to be probably closer than it should have been. But the last 2 weeks, I think he's made really, really good decisions. He's settled down. You can clearly see he's feeling more comfortable with the offense. I know the turnover thing is still there because he's had three in the last two, but, you know, the one at the end of the game against the Falcons is, I don't know, I don't really think as much into that one. And then the Saints interception, I don't think you can necessarily put that on him. I think he was made a good read, knew what the coverage was, and it just didn't work out, right? That's not like a bad throw or a bad read.
It's him and Devontae trying to make a play together.
Yeah, it's middle open. Didn't work. The throw is there. And at some point, you got to tip the cap to the DB making a really, really good play on that. Obviously, the fumble, be a little bit more in control of the ball. But all in all, he's making really good decisions. He's leading the team. He's more comfortable. He's more poised. They're handling the blitz phenomenally. This is going to be the toughest test they've had to season with Todd Bowles, who can come after the quarterback better than pretty much anybody. But I think he's playing really, really good right now.
Right. So the protection that you saw, we know that Jalen's the guy who's declaring the mic. You know, he's making the calls as far as we know.
Yeah.
All of that looks smooth to you.
Oh my gosh.
Cam and Jalen working together, that looks smooth to you. Like, this was supposed to be a big problem this year, Jason.
Well, I don't know that it was supposed to be a big problem. It was something to watch and see how it unfolded. And I think that right now it's unfolded really, really well. Jalen has operated extremely well against the blitz. And not only is he operating well against the blitz, I think it's made him more just cognizant of everything happening in the back end and what's happening in the box. I really think you're seeing him more aware, even when he's not hot. He's aware of blitzes now better than he used to be because he's in charge of that. The Saints played a lot of soft cover two, cover four. They also brought blitz zero quite a bit. I mean, the first play of the game when they tried to run the counter quarterback read was blown up in the backfield because it was a zero blitz. So they got a decent amount of some of the things that we struggled with last year to execute on, and they executed it really, really well against the Saints, by and large. So I think that operation right now is really between the offensive line, Jalen handling that, and then systemically having, like, you know, sight checks and things like that. Yeah. I think it's much better than what we were at last year.
Jason, you're bringing down game film after each game of the Eagles. I mean, this level of detail, you're not seeing this just on TV copy, right?
Some of it you're seeing in TV copy.
Yep.
And then, but most of it to really try and look at the nuance behind it, or to see what actually occurred.
Sure.
You need to watch the All-22.
Yeah.
And how difficult is it for all these different pieces, offensive lineman-wise, to just come stepping in and rolling through?
Oh, my gosh. I could not be more proud of both of those guys, Steen and Fred, this last game. I mean, just played so great. And they've been here for now, both of them, a couple years. And it's hard. It's hard to go in the middle of a game. You don't know if you're going to play or not and play at the level at which they did. And there was no drop-off. In past years, when Lane Johnson's gone down, it has crippled us offensively.
Yeah.
Against that very team. Against that very team. Like, Cam Jordan is as a defensive end, can rush the passer as good as anybody. He's getting older, but he's still up there. And he has ruined games when Lane has been out and we've played them. And Fred played phenomenal. Steen might have been, like, from a grading standpoint, I don't know what he graded out at. He might have been the best offensive lineman on the field. I'm not just making that up. Like, between him and Cam, and then Landon and Jordan are phenomenal every week, the line played fantastic. And to lose two guys and to still operate at that level in the second half, I thought it was damn impressive.
Jason, do you feel a sense of, I don't know if satisfaction is the word, but it's sort of, I'm trying to get somewhere in there, that the organization was able to up front, to this point it looks like, withstand your retirement? Like, I'm sure you might have felt a little bit of maybe guilt if there was such a big drop-off. Like, I'm stepping away and they're going to be barren. Do you feel, does it help you in retirement knowing that they've transitioned pretty effectively?
Yeah, of course. I think that, and I knew Howie has been on this for a while, and I think that the offensive line position in general, you're a little bit more fortunate because you have to have a good, sixth, seventh, hopefully eighth guy, because the reality is injuries are going to happen, and there's more room to develop guys in the wings that are guard centers, guard tackles. Like, there's more of an opportunity to really, be prepared for an older guy leaving as opposed to another position where, like, there's only one starter and you're not investing as much in that second backup potentially. So we've been investing in first-round draft picks. We've been investing in second-round draft picks. You know, there's been guys that have been brought in here for they've been accumulating talent. So to be able to be involved, pass that knowledge on to them while I was a player, still trying to do that in any way I can, it always feels good to leave something and see it still operating at a really, really good level.
Ruben, very similar when the Phillies transitioned from Mike Schmidt to Rick Shue. Just as effective.
That's not nice. Rick Shue was a roommate of mine.
Oh, wow.
Training, my very first major league spring training, great dude.
Wasn't his fault he wasn't Mike Schmidt, but... But he wasn't Mike Schmidt. I'm just saying.
All right, is anybody Mike Schmidt?
No.
Still no.
Come on.
All right, let's get a lot of calls in here. Jason with us for an entire hour. We got a lot from the last game, the next game, all sorts of stuff to get to with Jason. Let's go to John in Manioc right now. Good morning, John.
What's up, fellas? Jason, my Seattle neighbors. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, baby. Smile, you're in Seattle.
I saw you in Anna's Cafe a couple times this summer, man. They got good coffee over there, man.
Yes, I do.
Listen, real quick. So I just had to call. You know I'm a morning show guy, Joe. But the Jack Frick slander, like around 6:30 a.m., I just can't have that. Because I'll tell you what, I was going to call this station anyway about him, because I saw on Netflix they're making some Trey Turner movie about the ovation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fan that started the whole thing. And I texted Jack, and I was like, yo, this is about you, right? And he said, it's not. So I'm livid over that, because I don't care who technically.
So it must be about
that.
Joe DiCamera, right?
I'm so confused. I really am. I don't know.
Joe started it then.
It's
about neither of them.
I am so confused how Jack nor me, is that the proper way to say it?
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Well, whatever. There's an I, there's a me, there's a nor, there's a we. None of us are in it. I mean,
you wouldn't say me started it.
You wouldn't say, you would say I. All right, so I was right the first time.
Yeah, I don't know.
And at the end of the day, whoever it is, technically, if someone else did start it, it never would have got off the ground if WIP wouldn't have championed it and reached out to the multitude of people that they could get. So I think you and Jack got a little slandered there. And
why do you guys fight?
Why don't we set some contest up between you and Jack?
I would be very in favor of this baseball contest.
Some sort of little baseball knowledge contest.
You know what might benefit me more? I might just sue Netflix.
What do we think?
Yeah, how about I just sue Netflix? They get more money than, you know.
Well, you can do that, Seth.
Yeah, I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Good luck.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Good luck.
I'm
just joking.
Your high-powered team of lawyers will take on theirs and be in great shape.
Hey, John, give me a great answer. What has happened only once?
So I'll tell you what, ready? It's two answers in one. Silence of the Lambs is the only horror movie to ever win Best Picture. An Oscar in the history of the Oscars, and not only that, it's the only movie to ever win the Big Five.
Three movies have won the Big Five.
What are the Big Five?
It's picture, director, actor, actress, screenplay. So Silence of the Lambs, On the Waterfront, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest are the three movies that have won the Big
Seltzer.
Five.
Wow. Mr. Oscar over there.
All over it.
All right, speaking of the world of fiction.
Yeah. Just off the top of your head.
Yeah.
I'm an Oscar nerd, that's you know so that. Bizarre. I love that's movies.
So
you
he's got some that. Computers back there.
That's true.
Yeah, it's called my brain.
Right.
Wow. All right, so let's get to the Twitter poll. We have multiple questions of the day today brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin is offering huge savings on every leftover 2024 Equinox remaining in inventory. Together, let's drive ArminChevy.com. First poll question, is Jalen Hurts a top 10 NFL quarterback? Yes or no? We're going to get the poll results from the summer and assess how it's changed three games into the season. You can vote on that. Second poll question. We're still trying to give away the tickets to see Kevin Hart from yesterday's show because we had so many great answers when we were looking for a fictional royal character. Combination of a great character, but also a notable, you know, famous character. Kind of a little bit of all of the above there. So we've rolled it over into multiple poll questions today. We'll ultimately determine the winner. The audience will determine the winner by voting online. So let's go through the 6 o'clock hour poll. I have the results. We'll all go on the record who we would vote for. All right, here are the choices. Rhea, which would you go with? Which of these is the best character or example of a fictional royal? A, this is the classics division. A, Count Dracula. B, King Kong. C, Zeus, who's known as the King of the Gods. Rhea, which would you go with?
Count Dracula.
Seltzer?
This is tough. These are some haymakers here. I would probably go with King Kong.
Ruben Amaro.
Zeus. Ooh. Zeus.
John Ritchie.
Zeus.
Zeus.
Oh, that is just...
He's offended.
Come on.
Zeus has been around
the longest. It's Count Dracula, man. Count Dracula my name every time I just started getting coffee last year.
I'm feeling it.
Every time I get coffee, it's Dracula. And then they say Dracula, and they write Dracula on your little cup, and it really makes you feel cool.
All right, I would also go Count Dracula. So, Jason, Count Dracula, King Kong, or Zeus?
King Kong.
Okay. I see Jason King gets Kong. It.
All right. John, I have the poll results. What wins?
I think it's going to be close between King Kong and Dracula. My personal preference for Dracula is going to factor in here.
Well, the upset alert is on because it's neither.
Oh wow.
Zeus has won
this poll.
No.
Thank you very much.
48% of the people think Ruben Amaro.
Is that because he's the
landslide.
King of the gods?
Zeus won in a landslide.
I'm shocked.
Is it because of his lofty position amongst all of the deities or something?
I mean, he's the only one that's a royal and a god.
Once the people find out it was Reuben's choice, they're going to change.
But he's not a god.
No. You're mixing up Hercules. Zeus is a god.
Yeah, no, that's what I said. He's the only one that's a royalty and a god.
Oh, royalty and a god.
Yeah,
okay.
Royalty and a god. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be royalty of gods?
The queen that he's married to.
Yeah.
Of these three, Count Dracula, King Kong, and Zeus, he's the only freaking one that's a god.
I'm talking about King Kong. He's king of the jungle, right?
Like, that's kind of like a god.
All right, so
to those other animals on Skull Island, he is a god. To those little people who worship him on Skull Island, he's a god.
So Zeus, 48%, 29% Count Dracula, King Kong, 23%. We open up the second poll question on this same topic with more contemporaries to movies or TV show. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Prince Akeem of Zamunda from
Coming to America,
and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Wow, he really pales by comparison here. Like, he's going to struggle in the voting, I think, because he's lined up next to...
He's been around the longest, so we'll see if being around the longest helps him win. All right, so you can get voting on that. Let's go to the phones. Ed in Phoenixville. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Jason.
Morning.
Hi, Ed.
I need help, Jason, because I'm stuck in an IPA abyss. Like, the dankier, the better. So I really think a change up to garage beer is helpful, but I have an important question. Does that also work as a shower beer? I don't know if you
Oh my gosh. It works wonderfully as a shower beer. And actually, also, I just got a sauna. It works great as a sauna beer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Very hydrating.
So it's, I guess, would ubiquitous be the right word to describe where you can have a garage beer anywhere, all over the place?
Good, but that.
Yeah.
Good
I word. Think that that's
it's
a great,
ubiquitous.
It's a great, like, that's wow. a, we used to call it, we had a joy of vocabulary segment when I was in class. That would have been a great joy of vocabulary word. Yes. Ubiquitous is fantastic.
Well, I'm really interested to see how our, you know, cam and our interior of our line handles Vita Vea, who's a monster. I think they're going to do great. But what do they, you know, is that something to where you would trust Cam to kind of single up on him, or do you have to help on a guy like that big and, you know, athletic?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm obviously, you're hoping that you can double team Vita Vea. I don't think that with his size to create movement, you're going to want to double team him. But Todd is going to put those guys in positions where he's going to try and single them up. And I think it'll be interesting to see Todd's game plan. I don't think any guy individually in our line, I'm not worried about a single thing going up against Tampa Bay. But with, if there are receivers out, they can then stack the box, make the run looks more difficult. Todd can give you any type of look possible. He can be very multiple in the fronts he gives, the blitzes that he does. So I think that that's more what I'm going to be looking for. I don't think from like a one-on-one or person-to-person matchup that anything is like that eye-opening. I think that the guys will block really well. It's more about what is that going to look like and how are we going to execute against all that stuff.
Jason, do you think that you know, what you're seeing a lot around the league now when people are trying to stop the run is they're jamming it up on the inside. Yeah. They're going with the jam looks, you know, the Navajo or the bear, whatever you want to call it, where you cover the center and both guards. Can you talk about how that messes with you as an offensive line, how hard that is to get everyone to change their assignments because of that look?
Well, movement in the run game is really dictated by double teams for the most part. Nobody, unless you're playing a really bad player, is getting driven that far off the ball by anybody. And I think that the reality is that double teams are where most of the movement is created in the run game. When it's a four-down look, you get more double teams. When it's a five-down look, you take one of those double teams away. Mm. What teams are doing now is they're playing goal line defense and finding ways to get to these fronts where it's six across, all gapped out. And we saw it with the Saints this week. Saw blitz, essentially just gaps. Like they're pinching the ends and the D-tackles down, taking away the A and B gap, and the edges are secure by those two guys coming off the edge. And there's one linebacker in the middle. It's just with different personnel. And we did it all game long to New Orleans. We played a six-man front and still played a shell behind it. And it'll be interesting to see how offenses – this has been happening more. It started happening a lot last year. Vic did this against us in the playoff game in Chicago, the double doink game.
Wow.
We went out, and all of a sudden we're like, what the – and the problem with the six down front – like, you have checks for bear, and you have things to prepare for when it's a five-man front. When somebody puts a six-man front, it's like, dude, we got to get into a different play.
Yeah.
Like, there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So I think that
that was known as the Chip Kelly era in year three, right? There's nowhere to go.
that was a rough one. That Dallas game last Chip's year with DeMarco Murray, it was a complete disaster.
It was 15 carries for 2 yards.
I have never felt more hopeless in a running game, and it was a disaster. But anyways,
let's not talk about that.
I think that when you that's basically the big difference, right? Four down, you're going to get more double teams. Five down, a little bit less. Six, but there's advantages, right? When it's a four down, they can react better to pullers and in motions and stuff like that because there's more guys at the second level to make that right. Or if you're playing with a fullback, you can react more to a fullback going across a formation. When there's six guys on the line, they can't react as much. So then, I mean, you can do more of the counter schemes, the pull schemes, slices, things like that because they can't react as well when everybody's up on the line of scrimmage.
Hey, Ed, give me an answer here. What's only happened one time?
It's happening right now. Ed in Phoenixville challenging Joe DeCamera to beat the hammer.
I mean, I don't know if I should tell you to...
You should keep your mouth shut.
Or if I should say...
Yes! Oh, yes!
Because even Alicia Silverstone knows you have any frickin' chance. All right? Come on, man. What, are you kidding me? Should I say yes or no, Ruben? What do I do to this?
Well, if you're a champion, you say yes.
Yeah.
Amen.
Are you scared, Ed?
Hey, Ed, I'll see you Friday at 7:45.
Yes! Let's go.
All right. I liked what you did there.
Yes, finally. Ed's been trying to get him to beat the hammer for years.
All right, you're in.
You got to beat the best.
Then you're out. I mean, you're in and then you're out. All right, so Jason, let's go from, you know, we're talking about the Bucks, you know, interior line there with Vita Vea, who's had a really good career, to a player in Jalen Carter that we hope has a spectacular career. As the Eagles organization, the Vic Fangios, the Brandon Grahams, the Nick Sirianis, like everybody that's a leader and involved, how do they get Jalen Carter to bottle up what he did and do it again and again and again? How do you get him to be at his best consistently? Because that's what Fletcher was for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously you got to find out what motivates him and really speak to that. The best players are always self-motivated. That's just the reality of it. Like, I don't think that there is any really, really phenomenal player that isn't motivated to go just compete and beat the man across from him every single snap. So personally, I don't know that there's anything anybody's going to do other than Jalen Carter. But I think that what you saw on tape last week is very, very promising. And the games where he struggled isn't because of a lack of effort. Like, even the game in Atlanta where he did get cut out a lot on the backside, that's not – I mean, it was, like, poor technique. He's not executing it properly. Like, this guy wants to cause physical harm to the person across from him at times.
Yeah.
That is a positive trait in a D-lineman. And, like, the stuff at the end, he's talking trash. Like, he's pissed off. Looks like he wants to fight the entire stadium.
Yep.
I personally love that. Like, there's within reason, like, please control this and don't cause 15-yard penalties, which has been an issue at times. But there's an impulsiveness to a defensive player of, like, just utilizing that rage. Yeah. And I think I think there's a lot of things to look forward to. I think that for him, it's going to come down to just consistency and doing that play in, play out. And coaches can, teammates can continue to, like, push that. But a lot of that's just got to come on him.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm struck by, you know, Doc, who obviously went into a whole different zone. I mean, what a human, right? But went in a whole different zone. John, you remember as a player. Like, he wouldn't talk to the media till I'm not making it up, it was about an hour and a half after the game.
Yeah.
Like, it took a long, long, long time for Brian Dawkins to come out of game mode. And obviously, Jalen Carter, even though the game was essentially secure. I mean, John.
He had his own little world.
Because, John,
Brian was, like, he had multiple lockers even.
I know.
Like, he had his own. It really was a set up world.
He literally thought he was made of adamantium.
Jason, what's your relationship with Doc? I think it's clear that you two. I mean, Nick Foles has his own category. It was short lived as far as excellence, but it's like quarterback of a team that won a Super Bowl. It's a whole.
Sure.
But I think you and Doc, I think it's fair to say, are the two most popular. What's the term, James? Popular?
Beloved, popular, beloved? Yeah.
Like this century, Eagles.
I don't think there's any question about it.
So you and Doc, you have, what's been your flow through the years?
You know, he was with the Eagles for the Super Bowl team. He came back as like a what's the word for that? He came back as like a consultant
kind of,
but he was working more like every day in the building. So I saw him a lot that year. And, you know, obviously he's a former defensive player and a defensive back. So he's all of the time when you're dealing with former players, you're usually talking to guys that played your position. That's just the nature of it. And they're trying to impart wisdom on you or like stay involved in the room that they used to be a part of. But Doc made it a point to really talk to everybody as a consultant. And you could just tell, like, right away the gravitational pull that his personality has.
Big time.
Yeah. I mean, it's just being in a room, the intensity that guy has. And he would say things, like, I'll never forget, we're in a practice, and I think it was a joint practice, and he's talking about knocking the hand down at the second level of a guy. And in my head, I was like, why would I do that? Like, it's just a second level player. It's the easiest block in the world. Now I see guys doing it all the time. And I think it just speaks to, like, how he saw the game and the way he would communicate and just talk to everybody. You could tell that was what he was as a player, and I've enjoyed getting to know him a little bit more. I don't know him that well, but he's, I think that the reason he's beloved is because of how unbelievably passionate and obviously talented he was.
Yeah.
And he just exuded that at every moment. And everybody, all the fans got to see it on game day and in media interviews. But that's how that guy always is, it feels like.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing that I've gotten to know in interacting with him.
He also had, from a fan standpoint, I'll say, there's no question, he was one of those unique athletes that had an incredible ability to keep it real with the fans, not sugarcoat losses, not give away every trade secret. Mm-hmm. You know, Jason, I think it's pretty clear. Fans know that you guys, when you're an active player and all, you got to toe a line. Like, you can't say exactly how you're going to beat the opponent or exactly what went wrong in the game, because you want to keep some things in-house to maximize your chance to win the next time.
Yeah. You don't want to give competitive advantages.
Totally. That's the word. That's the phrase I'm looking for. Thank you for narrowing it down. But he kept it real. And he was just a good dude also, you know, which was obviously a huge part.
He was also crazy. I mean, there was could see that he was touched, like, a little bit off, and that was awesome, and that's part of what he tapped into, and that's part of what we're talking about with Jalen Carter. You tap into that, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
That's why he was able to play the way he was able to play.
We'd be misremembering this, but we brought him in to speak to our rookies in a rookie development program just to have him, you know, impart some of his knowledge about what it's like to be a Philadelphia athlete, how important, how intense it is. It was Mike Ondo who kind of runs that program. I think he still does. But it's his intensity is so infectious, and the way he presents himself and the way he feels about, you know, his craft and this city. It's pretty special. And I think the rookies really, I think that really took for them.
I'm sure.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
It really is. It you've never met anyone quite like him when
he's fascinating.
You meet him.
Yeah.
You have to be slightly crazy to be good at football.
That's true.
It's just the reality of it. And he had the right amount of crazy and a perfect amount combined with just incredible physical and talented traits. It was incredible watching him. It's incredible getting to know him. And I think that by far, probably the most passionate individual I've been around.
So crazy, Jason, and thoughtful, though.
Well,
so
clearly.
Jason has the crazy and thoughtful. Like, the thoughtful that you can actually conceptualize some of the craziness and convey it to us as fans.
Well, that's the thing. Yes,
listen, I know I'm nuts.
Jason, what was, you know, Ruben's talking about bringing a player in to talk to a team. What was it like when Kobe came in to talk to you guys in 2017. What was that moment like?
I absolutely loved it. And I'm always, whenever somebody's in front of the team, you're waiting to hear what they say. And I always hate when people draw it like generalities and cliches and like you don't get much out of it. I thought you want to talk about thoughtful? He was magnificent. And the way he answered questions, the way he would think about them, he had like those like cliches too, where, you know, he loved just like taking another man, like wanting the person across from him want to quit basketball. And that was something that like a lot of people were like, man, you can't believe, like he said that. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck to do with that. Sorry, what the heck to do with that. But he would also have these incredibly thoughtful like responses to like, you know, how do you develop as a great player? He's like, curiosity, ask questions. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have a burning desire to learn about the game. And there was a lot of things that he said that I just thought were incredibly poignant and I hadn't really heard before. And it was, I'll never forget that moment. And I thought that it was awesome for our team that year.
Yeah, it was so cool. And then seeing him celebrate when you guys won the title was really cool. All right, 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia, as we broadcast this morning on a great Thursday morning from the Tasty Cake studio. Of course, Jason with us for an hour. Also, we, you know, celebrate. The Phillies, they basically won a playoff round last night. I mean, Ruben, that's a fair way to put it, right?
No question.
They got a bye. They won a round last night.
Yes,
let's listen to as the game ended. Now, you don't know at this moment that the Phillies have the bye because the Brewers lost a couple minutes later, but let's listen to how last night ended.
3-1. Here's the pitch. Swung on, line to left center field. Hayes on the run. He will make the sliding catch, and that'll end the ball game. And it'll end the home slate with the Phillies' 54th win of the season here at Citizens Bank Park, a 9-6 victory over the Cubs as the Phillies inch closer to a first-round bye in the postseason.
And then minutes later, they got that bye and that whole deal. They're going to start on Saturday of next week, so two Saturdays from now will be game one. Game two will be Sunday. We don't yet know how many off days there will be, and the pitching rotation obviously is to be determined, at least for us to know.
That works out so well with the football, the bye.
It's pretty good.
Everything. No, we are on bye, it's perfect.
It's pretty
hey,
cool.
I can focus completely on the two games Saturday, Sunday.
No, I agree with you, John. So let's talk about focus, Jason. In the last couple of years when the Phillies made it, you've been involved a little bit from afar, down at the ballpark, the one night you're chugging the beer, you're watching some games, but you're also an active player. Do you expect you'll be able to watch more, attend more, you know, over the next 3-4 weeks if they go on a run? I know you got to do the ESPN thing, so that gets complicated. Do you think you'll be able to watch more than you had the last couple years?
Yeah, well, there's less distractions trying to prepare. I mean, when you're preparing for a week of in the NFL, you're really dialed in on that opponent, right? So you don't have as much time, especially when you get it. So I probably will be. But, I mean, I was pretty dialed in the last couple years, too. And I think the one time I was down there, that might have been during a bye week for the Eagles. Like, I think we've had some buys time up well with the last postseason runs as well. So I've been dialed into the postseason. I don't know if there's, you know, postseason baseball is pretty dang cool.
See, if I knew that, I would have had a rip you. I'd say not focused enough on the
I think we were good during those parts of the season. Maybe we should have needed we should have been watching baseball the second half of the season. That would have improved maybe.
That's right. Ruben, let's a couple quick postseason questions. Let's just drill down on some issues that are really key for Rob Thompson to figure out here. All right. Let's just go fast. Ruben, who in your opinion should be the second and third starter in the first round, the Phillies play?
Nola, then Sanchez.
In that order?
Yes, correct.
And Ranger goes to the bullpen and becomes an effective lefty in the first round in the bullpen, the first round they play?
Probably, unless they actually need him to start a game. I don't
game
think they'll
four,
need him
if
it doesn't work out.
All right, so you said Nola, then Sanchez?
Correct.
I'm with you.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Wheeler, Nola, Sanchez.
Right,
yes.
Right. Now, I'm with you. A lot of people disagree. We'll see. Yep. We'll be doing a poll on that one. That's a big one to figure out. Here's another one, Ruben. Left-handed pitcher starts. Is Hayes your left fielder? And if so, Marsh, who can't hit lefties in center, or Rojas, who can't hit anyone in center, who's your center fielder?
I think it depends on who the pitcher is and how much defense they need out there. I think I'll probably go with Rojas. And I think you saw some of the things that Rojas can do when he's in the nine hole, bunting, hit and run. You've seen him do some of this trial run in a sense, and he's actually passed the test.
These are big decisions. Is Austin Hayes an everyday player?
I don't think he is an everyday player right now. I only platoon him right now.
So then, what about Stott really plays?
What about Stott and Marsh? Like, how do
Sosa?
They,
you mean Stott and Sosa?
Stott and Sosa, yes. And Marsh being a part-time guy, too. Like, it feels like Stott, who I thought was an everyday guy forever, like now toward the end of the season, I see Sosa out there a lot more than I have, and I wonder what that means for Stott.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a coin flip right now because Sosa can impact the game from the right side at second base. So I'll be fascinated by that decision.
This
so,
is really so going to be something.
That's a Bryce big one. Bryce Stott at the end, in the playoffs in favor of Edmundo Sosa.
It is possible.
Nights.
It's possible. I don't know how he's going to go, but it is possible. I mean, listen, Stott is one of the best, if not the best, and maybe Nico Hoerner might be the best second baseman, but a close second is Stott. And the defense matters to Topper. It matters a lot. And Edmundo Sosa is very good, but he's not Bryson Stott.
But I want to bring one more question then right back to the phones and so much Eagles with Jason here. So, Ruben, one more. If the whole outfield is struggling on that side, the Rojas, the Hayes, the DeMarsh, like if they're not hitting, that's not inconceivable. Is there a scenario Schwarber plays left field and you get a Cody Clemens or a Weston Wilson or someone in there and there's a different DH reality?
Absolutely not. Unequivocally, no.
Well, those guys better hit then.
Well, Wes Wilson and Austin Hayes are probably fighting for a spot on the roster.
Well, I'm just saying, Austin Hayes, Marsh, and Rojas better get ready to hit.
Well, Austin Hayes has a pretty good track record against left-handers.
Well, he hasn't done much here.
I don't think they're going to see that many left-handers. Yeah. If you start looking at the lineups, there's not a ton of left-handers are going to see.
We'll see. Let's go to the phones. Jason in studio with us here, 215-592-9494. Some fascinating decisions for Rob Thompson and the organization in the next couple days. Anthony right now in New Jersey. Anthony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, you guys. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Anthony.
Hey, Jason, man. Pleasure to speak to you, man. Big fan, man. I appreciate everything you've done for this organization, man. May God continue to bless you, man. You deserve it.
Thank you very much, Anthony. I appreciate it.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about Jalen Hurts, man.
Yeah.
I believe, man, I want Jalen to be the guy that we need, man, but I don't think he is, man. That last drive last week, man, I was banking on an interception. If I had to put my house on it, man, I would have, man, but he proved me wrong in the weirdest spot. So it's like I don't know what to make of Jalen, man. Give him some more time or what, man. What you guys think?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think Jalen's a really good quarterback. He's among the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think that he's, if you look at his win percentage, he's far and away over the past three seasons one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. Now, last year there was some issues. Turnover started creeping up in the second half of the season. We really struggled. And that's not only Jalen, that's everybody included on the offense and defense. But I think that he's looked a lot better this year. I think that they're showing a lot more promise. He looks more comfortable. He's handling the blitz much better. There has been clear development in all of these weaker areas, and I expect the turnovers to get corrected. And I thought the end of last game didn't end in an interception, which I really liked. Dallas Goedert caught that outstanding crosser, and as Jordan Mulata said, unhitched his trailer enough to get it down there to the five. I think that there are far worse quarterback problems to have. Jalen Hurts isn't a quarterback problem. He's a fantastic player, and he's getting better. And I think the biggest thing you want to see with players is how do they respond to adversity. Last year was really the biggest form of adversity that Jalen has had to this point of his career, coming out of a Super Bowl run and all of us struggling, but including him down the stretch. And I think it's been a really, really promising side this start of the season that he's made improvements. He's had the self-awareness of what he needs to get better at, and he's improved at that.
Hey, Anthony, give me a great answer. Okay. This is for Kevin Hart tickets. What has happened only one time ever?
Hey, before my answer, man, Hammer, I got a fun fact. Guess who has more sacks, more tackles than Bryce Huff?
Who's got – let me think about this. So it's going to be a random.
I was going to say everybody.
Oh, I know.
Is that not right?
Be. It's Jalen Hurts.
Is that the answer, Anthony?
Brent Covey.
There you go. Right idea.
That's not good, man. Hey, that's not good.
My answer is the Titanic.
Well, it only sank once, but the concept of a boat sinking has happened more than once. But yes, the Titanic, that's the only time it sank. Let's listen to the moment. You know, Jason was just referencing there with Jordan Mulata. So this was funny stuff. If you haven't heard this, the big conversion, John, we've talked about how Jalen, you know, checked to that play. Phenomenally well run by Dotson, who picked without picking, picked without interfering physically. So it's a legal play. But he basically, you're hoping sometimes to get two guys to run into each other. He gets three guys to run into each other. So Goddard catches and runs. As he's running, you know, Jordan Mulata is mic'd up. And this is a very funny moment as Jordan Mulata is watching Dallas Goedert run.
Hurts is back. Hurts steps up. He fires. Trying to get some of it back. They'll get plenty. Dallas Goedert is right up.
Go for it. I'll hook the trailer, damn it.
60 yards from Hurts to Goedert.
I'm happy.
He's talking himself into that. He's like, I really wish we would have just scored and we could get
there. Jason, have you ever heard him use that unhook the trailer line before?
I have heard that before. I don't know that I've ever heard Jordan say it. Jordan is just such a unbelievably awesome personality. And you want to talk about leaving and like seeing guys, how they transition. He has taken such an awesome step as a leader in that building and as a player. His personality is just outstanding. He has that rugby feel and he's carried that over into football. And what I mean is like, I don't know if you guys have ever hung out with rugby guys. They all just want to hang out, drink beers, and be like a part of the group.
That's right.
Right? My dad played in a rugby league when I was growing up, and all those guys did that for is just to go to the bar afterwards and drink beer. That's the only reason they did it. And that's the kind of vibe you get with Jordan. He's a guy that just makes everybody happy. I remember going to an OTA camp practice, and you know, we had just gotten Mekhi Becton. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of noise out there, like who Mekhi is and, you know, is he going to pan out here? What's his work ethic? Like all that stuff. And I see Jordan out there having fun with him and running with him. And he's a scout team guy holding a bag and he's making Mekhi run just by his energy and effort. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it was a really awesome moment for me because like he just gets it. And he also wonderful sound bites in his Australian accent.
And a wonderful voice, to say the least.